there you are in modern travel and or modern life in general, and there's forces that, you know, are just going to take over. Right. Yeah, my whole life I've never had any kind of disruption really in a travel plan, you know, and we've traveled all over.
A local resident passes through the Tokyo airport the day after the earthquake in Japan. A call for submissions at the Sheldon Museum. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Bern Power. Those stories and more coming up after this news.
Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, which has health clinics in the Chilkat Valley, is offering two learning programs for local youth interested in careers in healthcare. A behavioral health academy takes place in Sitka, but is open to any Southeast Alaska residents ages 16 to 25 who are interested in behavioral health care, fields like psychiatry, psychology, counseling, or social work. The free academy is 1 week long from April 4th through 8th, and it takes place in Sitka. Travel scholarships could be available. The idea is to offer more information about behavioral health jobs to young people in the region. Search says Alaska has a shortage of healthcare workers, and some of the biggest needs are in behavioral health. At one point in recent years, there were more than 1,000 health job openings in the state, with the highest vacancy rates in rural Alaska. Applications for the Behavioral Health Academy in Sitka for Southeast Alaska residents ages 16 to 25 are at SEAHECAK.org and are due by March 25th. Another opportunity with Search is a summer internship program available for 6 Native students. The internship can take place at any Search location, including Haines or Skagway. The internship is designed to give work experience to Alaska Natives or American Indian students pursuing careers in healthcare. Interns would work between 30 and 40 hours per week under supervision of a Search manager. Students are given a minimal hourly stipend but must find their own housing and transportation. There's room for 6 Native students, 2 high school, 2 bachelor's degree, and 2 master's degree students. To qualify, students must be enrolled tribal members or have a certificate of Indian blood. They must be enrolled in high school, college, or vocational school and have a GPA above 2.5. The application packets are available at high school offices and must be submitted by April 15th. Search has medical clinics throughout the region, including Haines and Klukwan, and helps sponsor traveling health checks in those communities, plus Skagway.
The Sheldon Museum is looking for photos for an exhibition of Haines area imagery. KHNS spoke with museum curator Karen Meisner.
The main reason that we decided to do this is because the applications for the 6-week spotlight that we got last year, the majority of them were from photographers. And we realized that we've got a lot of, amateur, professional, and aspiring photographers in this area, and thought it would be really nice to give everybody a chance to have a little showcase.
And does the event have a name?
We never came up with a very clever name or title, so it's just a Haines photography exhibit. It's an open invitational exhibit to showcase the work of anybody in Haines who wants to show off their photography. The subject is Haines and the Chilkat Valley. We're limiting it to that because otherwise, you know, we'd get everybody's travel photos, and it's just what people have seen and photographed around the Chilkat Valley.
And what is the subject matter for the exhibition?
Animal, vegetable, mineral, human, built environment, natural environment. As long as it's roughly Chilkat Valley or Upper Lynn Canal.
So how should the work be submitted? Should it be matted or framed? And how big should it be?
I have asked that everybody bring them either matted or framed ready to hang. Right. So as far as that goes, it's just they have to be ready to hang. You know, since it's photography, it's flat work, and I designated that it had to be smaller than 15 by 15 so that we've got the wall space for it, and we've got some dividers that we can put up as well, so we can increase the wall space in here if we need to.
As we were talking, the museum doorbell rang.
Pictures.
Oh, yay. And we have a picture, yes, and we have somebody coming with pictures right now.
Suddenly it occurred to me that even I might be able to submit some of my photography to the exhibition.
Good. I hope so. I hope a lot of people do.
The deadline for submissions for the photo exhibition is closing time at the Sheldon Museum, Monday, March 21st. There will be an opening for the photo exhibition, Friday, March 25th, from 5 to 7 p.m. The show will run through early May. For more information, call 766-2366. Haines residents Dwight and Nancy Nash were recently on a trip to Thailand to visit their daughter. When it came time to return home, the news of the Japanese earthquake broke. Their next stop, Tokyo's Narita Airport. We spoke with Nancy Nash about her observations as she watched the Japanese travelers at the Bangkok airport.
In Bangkok, at the waiting area for this flight to Tokyo, a Thai Airways flight was just filled with all Japanese people because this would be just their kind of commuting flight back, you know, Bangkok to Tokyo and back. We were connecting onwards, but this was about 12 hours or 16 hours after the quake, and there was very little, you know, information and footage and everything, but the televisions at the waiting areas were just, you know, everybody was just glued to the screen and trying to find out, and it was just so poignant to be with, you know, all people who were probably related, if you know, to mm-hmm. people who were who they didn't know if were safe or anything. The language was Thai, you know, at the Bangkok airport, but it was all Japanese, and no subtitles or anything in anything but Japanese script, but their faces, they were all just. I think it's true. You hear about the Japanese people being calm as a general aspect, and they were, but they were all just they would talk amongst, they'd look at something on the screen and then talk to each other, and it was just like this vital interest, like, because there was so little information coming through that I think probably everybody knew someone that was affected or a relative, and we couldn't ask anybody. I mean, there just wasn't any English being spoken around us.
Their own flight had been delayed as they waited to catch a plane from Bangkok to Tokyo on their route to Vancouver.
And so that flight only left maybe an hour or so late. And then when we got to Tokyo, we got off, and we were supposed to have a few hours to our flight to Vancouver. And so we just didn't see any place once you're in that secure area to kind of check in. So we went to have a little lunch, went to a noodle shop, and found out that our MasterCards weren't working, and I think it was just a protection because we had charged something in Bangkok, you know, or used it the night before, and here we were in another country, and the next morning, or the next afternoon, and so right after that, I found the rebooking desk for Air Canada, and they went, "Oh, we've been looking for you, Mrs. Nash. We've rebooked your flight from Vancouver to Whitehorse because you're not going to make your connections from Vancouver to Whitehorse." And so then we knew that we were going to have to spend a day and a half in Vancouver, and we thought with absolutely no money, or no way to get any money, we were stuck basically in Tokyo for a little while.
At this point, they bumped into an acquaintance from Bangkok who had arrived the day before.
Then we were we ran into a secretary, the ambassador's secretary, actually, in at the U.S. Embassy in Thailand. And the ambassador's secretary, Ginger, was a friend of our daughter's. And our daughter's filling in for her this week as the ambassador's secretary because Ginger was going to her mandatory home leave. So Ginger left 24 hours before we did on a similar flight through Japan. And Ginger's plane touched down in the afternoon, mid-afternoon on Friday, right before the earthquake. And so she was on that plane seeing the tarmac rolling and the towers, you know, bending. And right then they evacuated the whole Narita airport onto the tarmac, and then Ginger had to spend the whole rest of that day on that airplane and had put on her Facebook page about midnight that she was going to have to sleep on the airplane. She's a very tall person. It would have been, you know, very uncomfortable, and plus everyone was so frrightened from, they just, you know, right, couldn't get any news. And so we're walking in this Narita airport, you know, the next afternoon, and, you know, thousands of people who have been stranded. I mean, the airport was just crowded, and there's Ginger. We recognized someone first. I go, "Ginger, you're still here?" And she goes, "Oh, yes, I hope to be leaving soon, you know." So people, that day, I think they allowed flights in somehow, like ours, but everybody getting out was, terribly difficult. It was terribly difficult.
But it wasn't just the crowded airport and the uncertain inconveniences. There was also an aftershock from the great quake.
And when the aftershock came, there was, people were just, it was a mild one, but people just, you know, who knows? I mean, I guess there's been a couple of quite large aftershocks since then. And so there's that whole idea that, you know, there you are at modern travel and or modern life in general, and there's forces that, you know, are just going to take over. Right. Yeah. My whole life, I've never had any kind of disruption really in a travel plan, you know, and we've traveled all over.
Eventually, after lengthy delays, the Nashes ended up being on the first Canadian flight, leaving from Tokyo's Narita Airport.
Our plane that did go to Vancouver, when we were picked up in Whitehorse the next day, our friend that picked us up said, "We saw your flight arriving in Vancouver on the television." I said, "What?" And he said, "The CBC filmed the arrival of Flight Air Canada 4 because it was the first flight to Canada since the earthquake from Tokyo." It's like we didn't experience anything firsthand except one aftershock. It just brings things home to you in a way that we were there. And for instance, I heard on, you know, radio recently that they're running out of food at Narita Airport. It certainly made me think of it as a small world and that we're all connected in ways we don't know.
For KHNS News, this is Burn Power with help from Tara Bicknell.